Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Shedcast, brought to you by Putting It Together. My name is Elaine McNichol, and I am here with you for most of this season, bringing you interviews with the artists after they have performed here at Shedinburgh. I am having the most wonderful time here at the Soho Theatre. One of my favourite things about the theatre is how much of a team effort it is to get a show off the ground. I just get such a buzz out of doing the tech for a show. That might sound mad to some people, but I love just sitting in the theatre. It's dark, the lights are changing, everybody's kind of milling about, pulling like all their different skills together in order to bring a show to life. I've loved it ever since I was a wee girl doing panto, and now that I'm an adult, I appreciate it even more. I just can't get enough of it. And the team here at Shedinburgh are working tirelessly behind the scenes to bring the spirit of the Edinburgh Fringe straight into your living rooms, bedrooms, wherever you're joining us from. So this is a little backstage team appreciation shout out to the Shedinburgh team. It's really great to be here and be involved. And tonight we have just had Sexy Lamp by Katie Arnstein. Oof. Sexy Lamp is a semi-autobiographical one-woman show that shines a frank light on the acting industry. I really hope that if you are listening to the podcast, that means that you watched the show. And if you didn't watch the show but are listening to the podcast, if you ever see Sexy Lamp programmed anywhere, go and see it. It is highly entertaining. I couldn't get enough of Katie's portrayal of her agent, Philippe. And that scene on Philippe's houseboat / acting agency hybrid was a class act. And I loved the way the story kept coming back full circle with the metaphor about the boiling frog and the Wizard of Oz, how that was woven throughout was phenomenal storytelling. And the music, what an instrument the ukulele is. But most importantly, it was entertaining, but it was a really difficult watch. Katie is telling us a really candid story about what it means to be a woman, not just in the acting industry, but in life. It's a really, really important show, and I'm so glad that I got to see it. I took a lot of courage from it. So if you are looking for tickets, if you don't already know where to look, get yourself onto shedinburgh.com and get your tickets for any future performances. You can also donate on there. Shedinburgh is raising money for future artists to get to the Fringe and tell their stories. And after seeing something like Sexy Lamp tonight, it just drives home how important it is for people to be able to tell their stories and bring them to the theatre and change people's lives with them. So definitely get on there, get tickets, donate, but most importantly, come and see the rest of the acts. You don't want to miss any more. Now it's time for my guest of the day. It's Katie Arnstein, and we are Putting It Together.
I'm so grateful to be able to perform again, even, you know, in this is filmed and shared with only a few people in the space, but that feeling of connecting and being able to reach out and tell a story to people that mm-hmm. are going to be watching from, you know, anywhere in the world now is so special, and I've missed human connection so much. The adrenaline from this morning, from waking up knowing that I was going to be doing this today, I feel so lucky. Feel so happy, really relieved, obviously. Mm-hmm. I still get nervous I don't know how many times I have to do a show, because this must be, you know, 50 or 60 times I've done this show in front of people, and I still mm-hmm. get as nervous as if it's the first.
You were saying you came a bit of a full circle with Soho. Explain that.
Yeah, so I trained at a regional drama school. I didn't train to be an actor in London, but we did our showcase at the Soho Theatre, and the mm-hmm. showcase is sort of the last I guess it's like the drama school equivalent of a dissertation. It's your final hurrah. And after all those, oh my goodness. Do you like cattle markets, audience? Because do I have a thing for you? Yeah, just terrifying 3 years of training and your whole life into what, 90 seconds of a performance. Mm-hmm. It was, and not only was it incredibly scary, I sort of mentioned in the show that that I performed here today, I did my showcase in my bra because I was told that I was blonde with a big chest, so that would be useful.
Wow.
And we had our body types written next to our picture in the brochure.
Oh my God.
And it was a really troubling experience for a lot of us. And it was at the Soho Theatre. And after we left, I thought, oh my gosh, if I can ever do a show at the Soho. That was way before I was writing or anything. I only started writing a couple of years ago. And Showcase must have been, was it 2012? So, you know, nearly 9-10 years ago. The idea now that I've come back with a show that speaks about what I want to speak about on the same stage is pretty moving for me.
Mm-hmm. And when did you kind of, with the stuff with your drama school and your showcase, were you aware that that was kind of the where the showcase went, or was it not until you were kind of in it and you were going, wow, the body types, and you know, because that's quite a strange request.
Really strange. I don't think we saw the program ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, drama school and the acting industry and life is way too body conscious, isn't it? It's way too body aware. But when you already, I think one of the things drama school and the acting industry that I began to be a part of and sort of am stepping away from now, it's so about what you look like, what you're willing to do, how naked are you willing to be, how sexualized are you willing to be. And Showcase was, I wonder about yours, but our showcase was like, what do you look like? What can you do?
Mm-hmm.
And that way round rather than the other way round.
You know, actually hearing that story, I was like, no, my school was far from perfect, but actually there was none of that in my showcase.
Right.
A woman did direct our showcase, so I don't know if that helped. Explain for us the journey from the kind of origins of where Sexy Lamp came from to your journey to the Fringe, or what we've seen today.
Sure. So Sexy Lamp is the second part of a storytelling trilogy that I've written. But with the trilogy, you can see the shows in any order. There's no, you can just see one. There are just some Easter eggs through the whole trilogy. Oh, okay. So Sexy Lamp is the second show, and it focuses on my dream to be an actor and seeing Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz as a child and being like, oh, okay, I'll do that, I want to do that. And then the reality of moving to London, the auditions that you have to do, the auditions that you have to desperately try and get and then, you know, do, about the challenges and how I felt that it was a different experience for me as a woman than it was for my male peers in the acting industry. I started writing this show in the winter of 2018 with my director Ellen Havard, and we put it on at Vault Festival at Vault 2019. Then we took it to Edinburgh after winning this award called the Pleasance Pick of Vault. So we were the show selected to do a run in Edinburgh, which was unbelievable. And from that, we've been able to tour it as much as we've been allowed and bringing it to Edinburgh this year. So that's the journey with it. It's a semi-autobiographical storytelling piece about my journey to being an actor and a writer.
And what about the other two?
So Bicycles and Fish, again, they're all sort of semi-autobiographical. Mm-hmm. Bicycles and Fish focuses on school and the education system for how I found it. And the everyday sexism that sort of is the washing line, I guess, that I pin things on through all the shows. It's the that's my main focus with all the shows, but I use humour, I use songs to get what I hope is a powerful message about how we can be better allies and how we can take up space as women and how doors can be opened for us by people who are more privileged.
Yeah. and to kind of help each other out as well, I think. Because we live in a patriarchal society, we can't help but be brought up through a patriarchal society. So we have prejudice inside us that's there.
Yeah.
And it's so disheartening when you see women trampling on other women, and you know it's not because they think they need to do that to get ahead.
Yeah. It's that thing, isn't it, of where they go, or if there's, take acting for example, if there's one female part in a cast of 10 and the rest are men, and you're in an audition room, you know they're only, it's that, you know, it's got to be you or it's going to be somebody else. There's only, so that idea that there's only enough space for one woman in a business, in a company, in a play, feeds into this idea that there's not space for all of us. And what I want to do is celebrate other women, be celebrated by everybody as well, and make it a more equal society.
Mm-hmm. And it's that competition, there's always that need to be in competition
completely
with each other.
Yeah, and it's like relearning a language, isn't it? Because like you say, it's the world that we've grown up in, it's the adverts that we've seen, it's the shows and the films that we've watched on TV. And it's relearning the language that, you know, is in every single song about sexual promiscuity, about why it's cool for guys to do it and not for women. Even now, like the imbalance is so stark for me, that's, I hope my work contributes to the loud screaming against the patriarchy.
And it really does. And I take my hat off to you for taking on that responsibility of creating something like that, because I am very guilty. It's something I've become aware of in the past year or so. My friend got me the book Invisible Women.
Oh, amazing, yeah.
And it's sitting, her name, Cristina Criado Perez?
That's right, that? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sitting in my room,
mm-hmm.
and I keep looking at it,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, I can't read it.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me feel so guilty because of the pain of, it's pain. I feel when I think, I don't want to know what's in those pages.
Yeah, well, that's I was going to say, it does come with that book in particular was so inspiring for me, but I had to dip in and out of it because it starts with, basically the point of that book I found was to go, think of anything, here's why it wasn't designed for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh my goodness. So it goes all the way from how transport is designed, how roads are built, the very things we walk around on, how they're not built for us, for our bodies, for our needs, for our jobs. And so, yeah, I would say you don't have to tackle it until you feel strong enough to do it, because you carry things around with you after reading that book.
Mm-hmm. But then I see something like that and I think that takes a lot of courage to write that. And it inspires me to kind of stop being, and I need to be trying to be kind with myself in it, because it's not easy when it's something, you know, every day could be an existential crisis. Unfortunately for someone like me, sometimes it can be, but and it's a maturing thing, you know, to be able to look at these things in the face.
Yeah, I think so. And it's taken, oh my gosh, I mean, I feel like Sexy Lamp took me my whole life to write, up in, like, it was every experience, and it was like sort of processing it. And you know, not all of the bad stuff that's happened to me is in the shows, because some of it's my, you know, my stuff to deal with in other ways. And I don't think, you know, it's also about how safe you feel sharing that information, right? No one wants to come and see something where I'm dealing with stuff on stage.
Yes.
But yeah, it's taken a lot of support. I mean, the show's been made with incredible help by so many people. And Ellen Havard, Becky D'Souza, Simon Jeffries, Andrew Hollingworth, Vault, everyone at Sheddenborough, all of, like, so much support. But it also, you know, it costs something to do it.
Oh yeah, it really is wonderful. And the music, I absolutely love the music throughout it. Are you a bit of a, obviously you are a musician, you play the ukulele, do you write music? And for other parts of your life, have you always been musical?
I've always loved music so much, and it's where one of the things that my dad and I have bonded over extremely. I have my dad's taste in music, and I can't tell you anything that's happened in the past 10 years musically. My dad, I remember so clearly, I was maybe like 12 years old and we were driving somewhere. My dad put this song on in the car and said, "What's this song about?" And it was called When the Rain Came Down by Steve Earle. And I was like, "Oh, it's about rain." He was like, "No." He put the track on again and was like, "What's this song about?" And I was like, "It's about a farmer." He was like, "No, what's this song about?" Played it again. And the song is about this farmer who's going through a drought and is about to lose all his land and his livelihood. And my dad was like, "Listen to all this. There's a whole story. There's a whole life story in 3 minutes. And now I can't listen to a song without being like, what do they mean? What's the story with that? So music is hugely important. But I wonder if it's like, you know, a lot of people who are actors and artists going to the theatre, it's not a completely relaxing experience. I want to know what the story is, how they came to it, how many drafts did it take, how many takes did they do in the studio of it. And I want to know all the information about music.
So who are some of your favourite artists inspired by your dad? Word.
So in terms of songwriters, Joni Mitchell, Tom Waits, the work of Nina Simone musically, I think is just, she's outrageous.
Outrageous is a fantastic word
for Nina. I mean, she just truly, just mind blowing. But old, you know, Leonard Cohen, people who can get whole stories, Van Morrison, into, you know, whole stories into songs, whole lives, communities through song.
Yeah. Oh, big Bob Dylan.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I mean, my goodness. Yeah.
Don McLean, a bit of Don McLean as well. I've spoken to another guest about this. Do you remember, because it was actually part of our show, but now that we're on music, I love it, a song that has made you cry? Oh
my gosh.
The first time you heard it.
Oh, wow. I remember hearing, because there are some songs, aren't there, where you just go, this has to be found, right? No one could have written this. This is so perfect. Mm. It's like a diamond or something.
It's like it's been passed precisely from the gods.
Oh my gosh,
to the artists, just so that they can
share. Exactly. And that is certainly true of, I think, A Case of You by Joni Mitchell, where it's sort of, I think she's sort of Shakespearean, because you go, what does she mean by that? I could drink a case of you and I'd still be on my feet. And all the good and the bad that can be, it's better, like, you can't describe it better than that. It's, for me, it's she's Shakespearean with her words. And A Case of You by Joni Mitchell can make me cry instantly. She's a force of nature.
And how much does music play into when you're in a creative process, so maybe writing? Do you use music
both to inspire me in terms of the theme, and also inspire me in terms of, like, just putting on a track and, you know, getting pumped and standing with my hands on my hips. Music plays a huge role in my life and in the shows I write. I write songs far easier than I write dialogue. And think that's maybe changing now as I'm practicing writing more shows, but I started by writing songs just on my ukulele. And I entered, there was a competition when I moved to London called the, like, Big Busk, where you could go to, you know, train stations and tubes and play ukulele. And I used to write songs for that. And that's what got me into writing, through songwriting rather than dialogue.
I love when you're, I was in Euston the other day and there was a woman on the piano in Euston.
Oh, nice.
And I can play the piano, I can read music, but I'm not that good. Okay. You know, it's one of these things, I'm like, oh, damn it. You know, it's one of these things. Oh, yeah. Some people are just so, and you're just playing in the middle of Euston, and it'll stop me every time.
Yeah.
If somebody's playing a piano in a train station, or if somebody, you know, is busking, and if it moves me, it'll stop me in my tracks.
Oh, that's so brilliant. Well, I feel completely the same. And there's a lovely sort of study that was done a few years ago about audience members at concerts and at theatre. I don't know if you saw it, and they worked out that everybody's heartbeat syncs, goes in sync. And you just go, oh my god, like, that's otherworldly to me, that you can be hearing something. You can come to the theatre that evening, or come to the gig that evening, with your own experiences at different ages, with different emotional, you know, baggage with you, and there's something about what's happening that makes your heart beat the same as the person next to you who you've mm-hmm. never met. That's phenomenal to me. I love that art has the power for that.
What do you think the last year, let's take say year and a half, let's mm-hmm. just take, what is it, what's the most important thing that's came out of the last year for you?
I thought that the sky was falling for me. I lost my job, as loads of people did. Fortunately, I didn't lose any loved ones like so many did, but I lost my relationship of 7 years, and it meant I then moved out, and so I lost my home. And I thought that all the walls of the house that I lived in were falling down, and then I saw that my friends and my family were holding the roof up, and it wasn't coming down on me. They all came. My friends and family stepped up in a way that I've never imagined, and that's what I learned last year, is that actually what could be seen as the worst thing meant that people stepped up and showed love in ways that I've never imagined.
What are the plans going forward?
So we've got a few shows booked of Sexy Lamp coming up. We've got some live shows. I'm moving back to London. I actually moved to Bournemouth in this year. My brilliant friend Laura, who's in the show, she had a daughter in lockdown, and I've been being a childminder during some of lockdown, which has been my privilege. So I've been doing that, which has been brilliant. But as things come back, hopefully more shows, hopefully more seeing live events, mm-hmm. and getting back to the things I love and changing them, trying to change the things that I didn't.
Amazing. Getting back to, I was saying that before, obviously we got the old recording equipment rolling. Today I was, now obviously I've been here all week and you're seeing new things all the time, and mm-hmm. I was struck by the fact that it's been over a year and a half where I haven't been able to see live theatre, yeah. and how, you know, how important it is. Mm-hmm. Gigs. I've not been to a gig yet, and I'm absolutely desperate to go to a gig. It's been really lovely speaking to you, Katie.
It's been so lovely to speak to you.
Thank you for taking your time out to come and chat to me.
Not at all.
And I wish you good luck with all the shows.
That's so kind of you. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Katie. It's given me the courage to go home and read Invisible Women by Cristina Criado Perez, which has been sitting staring at me from the side of my bed since my mate got me it for my birthday. So that'll be good. It's given me a wee bit of courage to open that one up. Coming up, we have Everything Is Absolutely Fine by House of Blakewell. And I am buzzing because I love myself a musical. So get yourself on to sheddenborough.com and get your tickets for all of our future performances here at Sheddenborough. That's it for another episode of Shedcast, brought to you by Putting It Together. Cheerio, folks.